Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mahoney. Do you have your member ID card?
Yep, I have it right here in the FEP Blue app, see?
Great.
It's awesome. The app can also help me find a provider and keep tabs on my deductibles.
Okay, can I...
Oh, yeah, and my out-of-pocket spending and visit limits, and I can call the nurse line.
I'm really glad it does all that, but I only need to see your member ID card.
Oh, that's it? Why didn't you say so?
Fearless is just one tap away. With the new FEP Blue app from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you can access your health benefits on the go. Download it now at fepblue.org/app.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined as always by Spike Friedman. I'm feeling pretty good after the Seahawks win. I don't know how you're feeling. Give me your thoughts.
I am feeling, at the very least, not bad after the Seahawks win. Obviously, it was a little dicey there for a while, but the Colts were bad, and the Seahawks, in the end, were not bad and made it really comfortable down the stretch.
Yeah, I had a lot better time watching the second half than I did the first. I described the first half as bad, the second half as good.
Yes, in broadly speaking, if I were to define those two halves of play using a qualitative metric, it went from bad to good. Yeah,
right. I think we're in agreement on that. Yeah. And this Monday edition of Locked On Seahawks is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Use the promo code Locked On, where they will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. MyBookie.ag. Something that appeared in last night's game was injuries, and
yeah,
the big one was Chris Carson's injury, where we received an update on. Spike, what are we hearing?
Pete Carroll just said that it is both a high ankle sprain and a fracture. There was briefly, that's what it looked like as it happened. It's a fracture a little higher up from the ankle, so probably less likely to have long-term effects than what happened with Thomas Rawls. It's a little more along the lines of what happened with Lockett and Earl Thomas, apparently, with a high ankle sprain thrown in. So that's not great.
You hear the phrase best of both worlds, but you really got the worst of both worlds with this one.
Or you got sort of the medium of both worlds. At the time of the injury, it looked like a potential career threatener in that his leg twisted in a couple different ways. There was a rumor that it was a knee in addition to a leg break, which would have been brutal. And then post-game, there was talk that it might only be a high ankle sprain, which I think means it isn't a clean break of the bone the way it, some of the last couple awful Seahawks injuries to young offensive stars have been. But this is a season ender for all intents and purposes, which is a bummer because Carson has looked great. He's worked hard. He's established himself as the sort of running back the Seahawks want, and now that position, which was looking a little more settled, is again a little unsettled.
It's definitely in flux right now. And we saw some relief with the emergence, really, of J.D. McKissic in both the running game and the passing game. And Eddie Lacy kind of had a resurgence last night in some stints. It's hard to differentiate the two, as you saw with Al Michaels, because they both played so well at times. So there's Thomas Rawls also, who is a healthy scratch, who will definitely be seeing more playing time. And there's also the option of promoting Mike Davis from the practice squad. Yeah, the team has a lot of options which way they can go to. It's just a matter of finding that rhythm again and like you said, settling the position once more after this injury kind of shook it up.
Yeah, and Pete also said that CJ Procise will be back next week. McKissic established himself as a really versatile option. Eddie Lacy ran for more yards per carry last night than Chris Carson. A lot of that was when in the game they were getting their reps. In the second half, the Seahawks offensive line looked way better than in the first half. And a lot of that was they were able to keep the ball, get that time of possession up, wear down a talented but thin Colts defensive line. And that opened up some big holes for Lacy late, which made him look like the Eddie Lacy we've seen gash the Seahawks on the Packers, which is exciting.
Right. And I also wanted to throw in real quick, We definitely noted how improved the Colts' rush defense was, but the Seahawks, I'd imagine this is a season high, rushed for 194 yards on 33 carries with an astounding 5.9 yards per carry. That played a big part in winning the time of possession battle in the second half, and like I was hoping they'd do, wore down the Colts.
Yeah, and it was, and there wasn't like a 100-yard, or obviously not a 100-yard run, but there wasn't like an 80-yard run in there. I think the longest run of the night was in like the 20s. So it was consistent chunk yardage in the second half, which is obviously how Pete Carroll, Daryl Bevel, Tom Cable want the offense to work. We also got it on some big Russell Wilson scrambles. Obviously, he had the touchdown. But his mobility, which was in question going into the game with his slight ankle injury and the fact that both of his feet were taped up as if he were, you know, starting his mummy costume for Halloween early.
Yeah, October, it's here. So
yeah, it's here. And you, if you aren't starting your costume now in terms of putting it on you a very little bit every day, then you're not doing Halloween right.
Right, and it's a little bit weird now that Russell Wilson tapes his ankles but has to untape them to get his shoes off every day. Yeah, so
every single day. No, or maybe he's sleeping in his shoes. I don't know. I don't watch him sleep, contrary to the rumors.
we'll have to ask Sierra about that.
We'll get her on the pod.
We'll have to find a way to get in contact with her, and kind of like I got in contact with Eddie Lacy, not personally, but through a tweet I made. There was an ESPN feature about Lacy opening up about his weight and the constant berating and trolling. And there was an excerpt in there that said there was a Twitter user, which happened to be me, that found all of his tweets from college expressing his love for Chinese food, or as he liked to call it, China food. Now, I wanted to kind of make clear that I just thought the way he said China food was funny. There was no malicious intent by it. But obviously, when you put something like that out there, it can be misconstrued, and people can use it as, you know, ammunition for trolling. And so Eddie kind of opened up about how, you know, every day he'd open Twitter and see, you know, people calling him fat, people bringing up collage, and he was wondering what people got out of it. So I just thought it was funny how he said China food. But my apologies to Eddie Lacy for any lost sleep that it could have caused. But I thought that was pretty funny. So this was this week's edition of Grant's personal connection with the Seahawks.
Grant's mea culpas. Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky thing when you talk about athletes and their bodies, because like the same rules for trolling someone's body, which isn't specifically what you were doing, but like it is that thing of like, don't do that. And at the same time, their bodies are the instruments that they're using. And so it's like complicated and tempting to go the other way. In this case, it's just fun how much he loves Chinese food. But it's also in relation to what's effectively an eating disorder. And so, you know, it's tricky.
Right.
And,
you know,
and going forward, the Locked On Seahawks podcast is an Eddie Lacy hype podcast.
Right.
And not an Eddie Lacy food podcast.
Yeah,
that's our promise to you, the listeners.
This is an Eddie Lacy fan club from here on out. We are pro-China food. We will say that. But there will be less and less mentions of it. And so, Eddie Lacy, yeah, we 100% have your back. And so does Al Michaels, yeah, even when you're not on the field.
Yeah. Al Michaels, it was great the way he made the call. Because as J.D. McKissic was, like, bending the corner, he's like, it's Eddie Lacy, J.D. McKissic.
He definitely found out just mid-play. He's like, I made a huge mistake.
Well, and it's great. It's just good up and then back down. It's that good professional timber and then back into it. You know, Al Michaels, still one of the best, but he's got his blind spots.
Right. I'd classify that as a top 10 Al Michaels call. I don't have an official list, but I know it's up there.
Yeah. Is it ahead of the Miracle on Ice? For me, yes. 100%.
Just because of the meaning behind it and the personal connection. I feel more connected to that than, you know, one of the most iconic sports moments in U.S. history.
Strongly agree.
And so, yeah, we'll go right into someone that got the running game kind of going and really set the game off with Russell Wilson. He had that, you know, 22-yard scamper and took the contact and got to the end zone. And that was, you know, one of the most fantastic plays of the season, if not the most. But I wanted to note how great he was last night. I mean, there's two interceptions that were chalked up to him, but were really at the fault of Jimmy Graham. But he was, for all intents and purposes, slinging it. He was the most accurate he's been all season. He's had the cleanest pocket that he's had. He materialized a couple of sacks on his own, but there was only six pressures last night that the Seahawks offensive line were graded with. So
yeah, and I would just say like two of those sacks were only sacks upon review, when in one case he almost avoided a safety. And on that one, he held the ball a little too long, but he almost did avoid the safety. I mean, you're talking about a matter of milliseconds. And the other one was nearly one of the most incredible completions I've ever seen, on like a weird flip pass to Luke Wilson. And it was the same thing of like his knee just touched, had to be overturned on review. And, you know, you add those two plays in and his night was even better.
Right. He was 4 for 4 going into that insane flip pass, and he would have been 5 for 5 with, you know, a 22-yard completion. So if that's the way you can get it, you know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and he's now back up into the top 10 in QBR. Like, as shaky as Russell Wilson has been for, I mean, it was the two first halves on the road that he was shaky this year.
Right.
But in total, he still looked like a top 8 quarterback for pretty much the entire season on aggregate. And that's good enough. Like, if our defense is playing well and we can get the running game going at all, top 8 Russell Wilson is good enough to get us to the Super Bowl. And if he plays like he played last night, that's top 5. That's top 3 Russell Wilson. That's a Russell Wilson who's only eclipsed by the likes of peak Aaron Rodgers. And that Russell Wilson can drag us to the Super Bowl. And so either way, I feel like there's been a little bit of chatter around like, is Russell Wilson the guy long term? And it's like, we don't want to not have this. We don't want to go out there and get a Sam Darnold who struggled against Washington State secondary. You know, we don't want to be getting weird. We don't want to be playing the Chicago Bears game of benching Mike Glennon for Mitch Trubisky after giving up an extra first round pick. We don't want to be there.
No,
this trade Russell Wilson stuff is nonsense.
Like,
Grant,
like even seeing like jokes about like, oh, time to start Austin Davis. You see jokes like that, but there's kind of meaning behind jokes, and like that's just something you don't want to see. Like, that's something that you want to keep out of mind so far that you don't even think of jokes to make about that. And I think Russell Wilson kind of silenced that last night. He had 9.8 yards per attempt, which is his highest all season. He looked like a pissed off, locked in Russell Wilson, which, you know, like you said, rivals peak Aaron Rodgers. You saw him making passes that we haven't seen all year. And it's something to marvel at, really, because we haven't seen something like that since last season. And even last season, he was dealing with injuries all year. So to see Russell Wilson in top shape, peak form, it's rivaled by Aaron Rodgers at his top form, which is really saying something, because that's really,
I mean, peak Aaron Rodgers is
arguably the greatest quarterback
of all time. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of the best, you as listeners to this podcast have access to the best information. If you were listening last week, you know Grant and I both picked the Seahawks to cover the spread, and they did. And so you could have made a lot of money on that. Where could you have gone to make a lot of money on that? MyBookie.ag. And you could have used promo code LOCKEDON to get 100% deposit bonus and doubled how much money you made. It's up to 100% deposit bonus. I don't know where the limit is. You could find that limit and quadruple your money. And there's a lot of online sports bookies out there, but MyBookie.ag is the best. They pay out the fastest. They've got a great app. They've got live betting, in-game betting. So when you see that the Seahawks are down at the half and you know they're going to cover the spread, you can make even more money. And Grant can't do this. Grant's too young, but I can. So I'm going to be using his picks all year to profit myself. So go to mybookie.ag, place your bets, tell them you got sent up by the Locked On Seahawks podcast, use promo code Locked On, get over there, make a lot of bets, make a lot of money because you listen to this podcast.
yeah, I'm going to be putting more money into Spike's pockets, so why not make some money off of that?
Yeah.
And
Grant here is he old enough to bet? We're not going to say. We're not going to say on the podcast, but let's just say in February, he's going to be making a lot of money.
I'm going to be studying. I'm going to be learning the ins and outs, and I'm going to be taking advantage of our football acumen, and so Spike won't be the only one profiting off this podcast.
Yeah, that Super Bowl bet that you put down is going to be crazy when the Seahawks are there.
All right. And another thing about money, the Seahawks were absolutely great on the money down. They were 10 for 15 on third down, which is you know, really far from the norm this season. That's by far the biggest area of the struggles for offense besides, you know, allowing pressures is you know, keeping the drives going and getting those long sustaining drives. And we haven't really seen them make those drives down the field. And credit to the offensive line for keeping Russell Wilson clean. As I said, only 6 pressures, which is a huge upgrade from 34 pressures.
34 pressures last week. Way too many pressures.
3-4 together.
34.
It's a big number, and it turned into a small number this week, which is recommended by most football analysts. And so the Seahawks are listening.
Well, and I'll say that those third downs, like there were a lot more third and fours, and it felt like the running game was obviously better than it's been, but it also came early from the short passing game. They were taking what they could get with Doug Baldwin and Luke Wilson. They were getting and also Carson out of the backfield as a receiver. They were getting, you know, 4 or 5 yards in the passing game early in the down sequence, so that they were under that 3rd and 6 mark at the end of it, which meant they had the whole playbook available to them, and they weren't getting as many egregious holding and sack penalties. There was that one third quarter drive where both sides were getting a holding penalty on every play, and they kept washing out. But aside from that, they were able to stay in 3rd and reasonable. And something that I've been seeing this week, because Tom Cable talked about it last week, was 3rd and 6 is a barometer for him. And that sounds too far. Like, obviously, you want to be at 3rd and 4 because then you could theoretically run, which really throws off a defense. But there was some research done on it, and 3rd and 6 is way better than the best team in the league's average. I think the best team in the league is averaging 3rd and 6.3, and the worst teams in the league average about 3rd and 8 for third down. And so staying ahead of that 3rd and 6 mark means you're in better shape. It means you're going to be converting over 50% of your third downs. And the Seahawks were able to do that on Sunday. And by the end of the game, it made all the difference.
Right. The running game was apparent more so in the second half, where I think this week the Seahawks stayed on schedule more so than any week that we've seen this season. And being able to convert those 3rd and shorts is a lot more favorable, in my opinion. I know it's a hot take, than 3rd and long.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. And like, and I, you know, you don't want to give all the credit to Odey Egbuchi, especially when he managed to have 3 holding penalties on one drive, that 2 of which were miraculously wiped out by offsetting penalties. But that side of the line looked pretty good, despite Jermaine Ifedi again having like a couple weird plays.
He got called for a kind of a ghost hold. It was really kind of borderline, but it was generally brought up as kind of a weak call.
Well, it was that Wilson had to escape the pocket over his shoulder in a way that he didn't expect. He just didn't release quite quickly enough. But that was because the other side of the line let like 3 free rushers through. And so as much as Ifedi gets that holding call, that's not on him. And I think the question going forward is going to be the left tackle position again, because it looks like Reese Odhiambo bruised his heart.
Yeah, it's not something that I've heard a ton about. It's more something that you kind of hear as somebody on Tumblr or Twitter talking about, oh, a bruised heart after a breakup, or you know, something along those lines. But a bruised heart really generally happens after a fall of over 20 feet or a car accident. So this isn't something that you hear every day. And how long should we be expecting Odhiambo to be out?
Well, according to Twitter doctors, who are the most reliable medical sources out there, it is almost certain he won't be playing this week, and unlikely he plays before November, which means he's out for this crucial game against the Rams this week. And he's out at least a week or two on the other side of the bye, which means we're going to have to be bringing in Matt Tobin, who is still getting acclimated to our system. And while I'm not super worried about that post-bye, this week against a really good Rams front, right after the offensive line looks competent for the first time all year, it's like, it's scary.
It's the only Seahawk way that like things can unfold. And we could also see the Seahawks debut of Isaiah Battle. He was traded to Seattle from Kansas City. He's one of the guys that can be a little switchy and play multiple positions, but he was not graded well, as you can assume, because Seattle made a deal for him. But I'm assuming that he's going to be active going forward just for the added depth. You see Matt Tobin being brought in. As kind of the de facto left tackle when there's...
Or the other possibility is if Odhiambo's out a long time, and I wonder if this will have an impact on their decision, how long they think he's going to be out. Because to me, the most understandable move would be to put Jokel over at left tackle if this is a long-term issue and bring in either Posick or bring Glowinski back in at the guard position.
Yeah, so
I think that gets the most talent on the field, but it shakes things up more if Odhiambo is going to be coming back after three games. If he's going to be out till December or potentially for the year with an injury like this, which is a scary prospect and unfortunate, and obviously I'm rooting against that. But if that is the case, I think you got to figure out how to get the most talent on the field, and that involves moving Jokel over to tackle.
Yeah, and the Seahawks are known to really maximize their talent at every position but offensive line. So if something kind of clicks in their head, you know, put the kind of best lineup on the field, that'd be preferred. But yeah, Odhiambo is still in the hospital last update, and so we're rooting for Reese. He's put it all on the field except one play on that Russell Wilson scramble to eventually find Tyler Lockett downfield. He was kind of floating around by himself in the backfield, and Russell Wilson kind of had to run around him to get the ball downfield. So that was a little funny, but
and he also did at one point, like there was like a late block and like a body went flying into the pile, and it was one of those things where like, ooh, are they going to throw a flag on that? But it was actually Odhiambo blocking Jokel into the pile. So it was a little bit of friendly fire from Reese. He's been thrown into the deep end at not his best position, and he's not done, like, we don't have to pretend like he's been good, but like, we're 2-2, despite the fact that we're starting a guy who shouldn't be left tackle. The next guy up isn't going to be better. And Reese is like a human being, and a bruised heart is a scary injury that shouldn't be happening in any sport. Like, it's crazy. It should only be happening in car crash.
The three most common causes, like I said, a fall over 20 feet, a car accident, and also chest contusions from CPR, trying to resuscitate someone. It's a very serious injury, and like we said, we're rooting for him, and we hope that he not gets back on the field as soon as possible, but just gets healthy as soon as possible.
Yeah, because there can become, like, again, we aren't the Twitter doctors who are out there saying things, but we are the people frantically WebMDing chest bruise, heart contusion, and learning that it can be a quick recovery, there can be complications, the heart's a delicate muscle.
Some would say the most delicate muscle.
I'll go with that.
Right. So transitioning to the other line, which, you know, kind of had its coming out party a little bit, always in the backfield in the second half, I wanted to mention Frank Clark, who popped last night. He, you know, had a few pressures on his own, and he had one specific play where I had to stop the game and get a video of, which was the most athletic thing I've seen from a defensive end in I don't know how long. He jumped over a cut block, not only to make it on his feet, but to then make the tackle and limit the Colts' gain to, I think, 2 or 3 yards, which was an athletic feat that I haven't seen from a defensive lineman in a little bit.
It was wild. I mean, because when you jump over that cup block, you're sort of back to zero in terms of your acceleration. That he was then able to get back up to 60 and make the tackle was crazy. And it also was an indictment of the quintuple cup block theory of Tom Cable, so I appreciated that as well. Although I will say Frank Clark probably has more experience than anyone else in the NFL
exactly
jumping over cut blocks in practice.
He's going up against it virtually every day. So no one's more well-versed and scouted when it comes to, you know, getting over cut blocks. So praise to Frank Clark and Tom Cable for getting him prepared for that situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, is there someone from the defensive line that stood out to you, really? Or, you know, it could be from the front seven, or could not have stood out to you?
Well, there's a couple things. The first is that the depth of the defensive line finally came into focus with Marcus Smith and Garrison Smith both making impacts once Cliff Avril went out. The update on Cliff Avril is we still don't know what's wrong with him, which is not great. So the fact that the Seahawks have some depth at defensive end is huge. Bobby Wagner was incredible, as we talked about last week. He's our, you know, next man up at running back if need be. And his fumble recovery proved that.
Yeah, I just wanted to interject real quick.
Yeah.
We see the defense finally get some takeaways, but when they got them, they were opportunistic with them and ultimately maximized the amount of points we can get by taking it back to the house. And so Justin Coleman had a little bit of an easier route taking his back to the end zone than Bobby Wagner did, where Bobby Wagner got to showcase why he could be the fifth string running back for the Seattle Seahawks. He had a couple stiff arms, he had a couple juke moves, and ultimately he kept those legs churning, and he got to the end zone. So the Locked On Seahawks podcast is very proud of Bobby Wagner for making us sound not stupid.
Yeah, again, if you had gone at MyBookieAG and bet on Bobby Wagner to score a touchdown, that'd be weird, but hey, you get paid out.
Right.
I'll say the one guy on our defense who has not flashed for me this year is Cam Chancellor. Again, he was a little shaky on Sunday. He's not making the impact plays we expect in the running game. He's only made one in our week one game against the Packers. He had a really good stop, but like generally he isn't affecting the game at the line of scrimmage. And then he's still getting beat by tight ends. Jack Doyle had a couple opportunities to make some plays that he dropped. He had two pretty ugly drops. But again, it's like that issue for the Seahawks of allowing completions to tight ends had like sort of gone away the last couple weeks, but they're still there against an athletic tight end matched up on Chancellor. And I'm not saying Chancellor's done. I'm not saying he isn't the player he was, but it's something to watch out for going forward, especially given the depth that the Seahawks have at the safety position, whether there could be any competition there or whether there'll be any scheme changes that bring a third safety onto the field.
He's definitely in a funk. We haven't seen the Cam Chancellor of old. And, you know, it comes with playing that kind of taxing position at strong safety. And one play that I wanted to note, that two-point conversion attempt that the Colts failed, you know, Cam Chancellor was credited with a pass breakup, but, you know, you watch him on that play, he wasn't really turned around. He was kind of focused on Doyle, and not by chance, but he deflected the ball. And a better throw from Brissett gets 2 points on the board for the Colts. And I don't know how that, you know, changes the mood or how the team goes into halftime. You know, it's something that you have to take note of and you have to worry about because, like you said, the Seahawks have so much depth and, you know, always the young guys pushing forward and kind of driving these players to, you know, be at their best so they can stay on the field. It's kind of become a punchline at this point, but the Seahawks mantra has been always compete. And so there's always this driving competition, and you got to be at your best to be on the field for the Seahawks. And I say this watching an offensive line that's not at their best constantly, but when it comes to the defense, who has been historically great, you got to be at your best. You got to be, you know, you got to be sharp on the field. And hopefully Cam returns to form and he makes us eat our words.
Yeah. Well, and there are just so many standout performers on the defense, even in a game where we made Jacoby Brissett look competent for a half. And Jacoby Brissett is such an upgrade over Scott Tolzien that the fact that the Colts came into this game 32nd in offensive DVOA, I mean, they aren't good, but they with Brissett under center, they're more 25th in the league. They're vaguely competent. We made them look competent for a half. But there really isn't another position where we're weak right now. Cornerback looks settled. I mean, I don't know if Jeremy Lane is going to be healthy or how much he's going to play, but like Keel Griffin played great, even if he got burned for a touchdown. Richard Sherman erased T.Y. Hilton.
He was just non-existent.
Oh my god! I mean, Sherman is so good right
He's
now.
He's the best. He had one defensive holding,
but like, yeah, he literally. I mean, they couldn't go near him. And then Justin Coleman, you know, they targeted him three times. He gave up one short completion and also took one to the house. So the cornerback position looks great. Linebacker Bobby Wagner looked incredible. KJ looks fine right now.
Will Hoyt looked fine too.
Oh yeah, Will Hoyt had a couple big plays. He looked great.
Yeah, no, he ran down Frank Gore in the backfield. It was a great play. Yeah.
And then the defensive line looks good. So, yeah, I mean, it really is. The fact that we're harping on Chancellor speaks more to the talent around him and the potential on the bench and the standard that the Seahawks defense has set more than
that. What's wrong with Cam Chancellor?
Yeah, exactly. Like, if he's lost half a step, well, on the Seahawks defense, that's a big deal.
Right. And we see, you know, players when they're not their best, them come together and them kind of mask the deficiencies. Like, Sherman gets beat, but you got Earl Thomas over the top, and you got him having his back. And so you see how they can, you know, kind of lean on and rely on their teammates. And I think Justin Coleman, I don't know if he's a long-term answer. I don't know, but Shaq Griffin looks like he could be a long-term answer opposite Sherman. And I think he's looked fantastic in all of the snaps that he's gotten. He got the touchdown that he gave up, but at the same time, it wasn't terrible coverage. And
no, it's great. I mean, it was
a great play by Moncrief.
He high pointed the receiver high pointed the ball, but Griffin was one of those throws where the receiver's body momentum is going to like slow him, and it's just such an opportunity if Griffin doesn't get his head around for that to be a pass interference and ball at the 1 yard line, and he got his head around and contested the ball pretty well. It's just it was perfectly high pointed on him, and there's not much he can do. We've seen that happen to Earl. We've even seen it happen to Richard. I mean, like, the best guys get beat occasionally, and Griffin did everything a rookie could be asked to do in that situation if he were a first rounder, much less a third rounder.
And I wanted to especially talk about the Jacoby Brissett run play.
Yeah.
Now, he gets Shaquille Griffin turned around on the play. And at first, people thought it was Sherman.
Yeah.
And Sherman even took to Twitter about it. He explained how he wasn't even involved in it, and people were talking about him, and he thought it was funny. I thought it was funny. But
it was a tough night for guys spotting guys with dreadlocks. Right. Hey, check the number before you yell the name, maybe.
Right. Al Michaels and the average Twitter user, you know, were more alike to celebrities than people think. But Shaq Griffin, I get what he was doing. He was trying to play the outside and see if Brissett was going to take it outside with the block that he had. Ultimately, Brissett kind of owned him.
Yeah, but it did look like Griffin was being controlled by like a 5-year-old playing Madden.
Right. No,
he turned around.
He definitely pressed the wrong button in somewhere in the process and ended up being blocked hilariously. But he played a great game. Coleman played a great game. Sherman looked like the Richard Sherman that everybody loves and hates. And all in all, the Seahawks secondary looked like the Seahawks. They looked like the Legion of Boom was back.
Yeah.
Now, they don't have the founding members like Brandon Browner or even the replacement with Maxwell, but you see the next man up mentality and how to get the guys prepared to show out and have these kind of performances, because competent as the Colts looked in the first half, you know, there wasn't the explosive plays that they've been given up, and they weren't getting these chunk gains aside from that Brandon Williams catch, which, you know, shout out to Brandon Williams, former Seahawk. And they looked like the Seahawks defense. They just let them linger around for the first half, and then in the second they were back on their BS and shut them down and for all intents and purposes smothered them. That was the word that I used.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up 32 second half yards.
And 32. They scored 36 second half points. Yeah. So that just speaks to how crazy dominant they were.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. The Colts needed to get yardage and they couldn't do it. And that's what we want from this defense. Again, like, I think the takeaway from this game is like our worst fears about the Seahawks have been allayed. You know, the injuries are scary going forward, but I think this team is in good shape. And I think we've got a crazy important matchup this weekend. that we'll be previewing the rest of the week.
Yeah, no, it's against the Rams for the top spot in the division. We've always kind of struggled when we have to leave Seattle and travel to now Los Angeles, used to be St. Louis, and we have to play in that heat again, which I don't think is favorable for the Seahawks. We've seen how it's affected them. We've seen how they've been gassed for these big gains, and yeah. And it's a Rams team who's been a thorn in the Seahawks side for the past, you know, 5-6 years. I took this down. The Seahawks haven't won. They've won one season series against the Rams in the past 5 years. They've swept the Rams once, and that was when they won the Super Bowl eventually in 2013. The rest,
and they barely won that game in St. Louis. They right. barely won it
by the skin of their teeth. It was a goal line stand that they were able to make. We want to see the Seahawks win. I know that's, again, I'm coming with the hot takes today, but we want to see them win. But we also want to see them in the dominant fashion, and that's something that we really haven't been able to do against the Rams. So yeah. they need to take the momentum into that game, into Los Angeles, and show out again. Someone who always showed out whenever he could, laid it all on the line, was Kenny Easley, who had his jersey retired. He was put in the Ring of Honor last night, and he was an absolute monster. He played for 7 seasons, but like I said, he laid it all on the field and taxed his body to the point where he can only play for 7 seasons. He had 32 picks, 8 sacks, 3 touchdowns from returns, and he was the Defensive Player of the Year, 1984, 3-time All-Pro, 5-time Pro Bowler. He's the All-Decade Team for 1980s. He's the Defensive Rookie of the Year, and you know, I'm listing all these achievements and you're wondering why this guy wasn't inducted earlier and why he wasn't inducted into the Hall of Fame earlier. Easley had some issues with the Seahawks. They traded him in his late stages of his career to Arizona, and he kind of had a little bad blood up into the early 2000s, and they kind of calmed that and rebuilt their relationship. But this guy was, you know, I liken him to an Earl Thomas in a Cam Chancellor frame, which is high praise.
Well, and I'll just say, like, it's that tough thing where, like, longevity gets you in the Hall of Fame in baseball, and it does in football too, but in football, short-term dominance kind of means more because of the brutality of the game and the expected career length, and so someone like Easley can slip through the cracks for a while, but it's great to see him get the recognition he deserves.
Right, so congratulations to Kenny Easley. May he enjoy his time in the Ring of Honor. And so I think that really sums it up, unless you have anything you want to
cover. Nothing else. I got nothing else.
I think it's worth mentioning how good Richard Sherman is again.
Oh, yeah. Richard Sherman's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the most underrated player in football. There, I'll just drop a hot take.
No, that's something I 100% agree with.
Yeah, he's the most underrated player in football. And I'm just going to keep saying that every podcast as my sign-off. Richard Sherman, most underrated player in football.
Because when he gives up a slant for 13 yards to start the game and everybody loses their mind, they don't see him for the rest of the game. And that in itself proves our argument.
Yeah.
And so this has been the Locked On Seahawks podcast, again, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Also use the promo code LOCKEDON, where they will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. You got to make your money. So I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.
Make sure you guys tune in on iTunes and Audio Boom. Please listen, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. Thank you.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.